Spring into action with the biggest fly fishing gear sale of the season. Jackson Hole Fly Company is thrilled to announce their spectacular 25% off anniversary sale. They are inviting all of us to celebrate with them. Whether you're a seasoned angler or just starting out, there's never been a better time to upgrade your equipment and save big. Are you looking for a rugged, waterproof sling pack or backpack to keep your gear dry throughout all the adventures this year? They have you covered. Are you in search of a new carbon fiber landing net? Top quality fly boxes, essential gear like fly lines and leaders? They have all that and more. This is your chance to grab some incredible deals and make the fishing season unforgettable. Don't wait. Dive into the savings today. Head over to jacksonholeflycompany.com and take advantage of this limited time sale.
They were pulling back up out onto the Brittany Peninsula. And we were going to cross this bridge and over the Orne River, I think it was. And anyway, I looked down and I saw this beautiful Atlantic salmon hanging out on the wall outside this building down there. And I thought, oh, God, if I could just stop and go down and fish like that now, I would love to be able to fish for one of those.
That was Frank Moore sharing an amazing World War II story from his very, very special life. Today we are celebrating the life of Frank Moore, a Northwest steelhead and conservation icon, as we pass our 300th episode. This is the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show.
Welcome to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show, where you discover tips, tricks, and tools from the leading names in fly fishing today.
Hey everyone, Frank Moore passed away this year at 99 years old. I had the pleasure of having Frank and Jeannie on the podcast back in 2018, and today I am re-releasing that episode to celebrate Frank's special life. Frank was a World War II veteran who stormed the beaches on D-Day, was one of the early pioneers of the conservation movement when it really wasn't a thing, and is one of the people that fished on one of the most historied steelhead rivers in the country, the North Umpqua. This is one of the few episodes in our 300 episode history that I was actually in person doing this interview. So I sat down with Frank at their old house. This is actually the house that tragically was lost in the big fires the last couple of years. And I connected with Frank and Jeannie. This one was super amazing. So I'm happy to share this again and re-release this one. There's a creaky chair. It's got the audio is I think good enough here. But check it out. This is episode in episode 100 we had Joan Wolf on. Episode 200 we had Lefty Cray. We had a Lefty Cray story episode. And today I give you episode 300. Here is Frank and Jeannie Moore.
Basically, I got into fly fishing because my father was a fly fisherman back in the 1920s. And when I was born, as soon as I was hatched, we were up out in the river somewhere. And I was born in the little town of Carlton, out of McMinnville. And we used to spend a lot of time up on Panther Creek, which is just little stream just west of Carlton up there in the hill.
It flows into like the South Yamhill. Yep.
And I also fished back in the 20s and in the Yamhill, South Yamhill. The North Yamhill, yeah. Up out of Yamhill and Carlton and up in that area.
It's all wine country now up there.
Yeah. And it used to be on that hillside below Carlton going west, that used to be a big mill endeavors out there, and they had a big that huge flat area with all pond. It was all a big log pond.
Yeah, mill pond. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it was huge.
Huh.
Huge.
So that was a huge industry when you were growing up in there. Yeah.
Well, Carlton. I mean, Joe Flora had what was called the Carlton Coast Railroad that went up and covered that whole area up west of Carlton with railroad. And they bring train load after train load after every day, logs as this table.
Yep.
Wide.
Right.
Huge.
Old growth.
Old growth. One one log to a flat
car. They called them one loaders or something.
One log to a flat car.
Yeah.
Not a truck, jeez, but a railroad flat car.
Wow.
Some of those were just unbelievable.
Are there any of those trees out here anywhere?
No, you don't see any of them left at all like
that. Yeah.
You don't. There's a few. There's one big tree up on the mountain up here.
Yeah.
That I don't know if you've ever been up there or not, but it's a huge old, you know, several little big trees in that one area there.
Yeah.
8-10 foot through, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But boy, that out of Carlton, between there and Tillamook, it was probably the best tree growing area in the world.
Hmm.
It's out from the southern Washington on the coast there, mm-hmm, on the coast range.
Yeah.
Down to Salmon River.
Oh, yeah.
From there south, they started dropping off again. But that one area in there, they had some humongous trees.
It's a temperate, I think it's like the only temperate rainforest.
Yeah.
That's what they call it or something. Yeah.
It was an amazing, amazing area. But like I say,
tell them about your first fish.
Huh? Oh, yeah.
Tell about your first fish with your dad, the big fish that you got that your dad didn't.
Oh, well. We'd be fishing practically every, you know. Dad had a garage in Carlton, Oregon, and but every weekend we'd travel somewhere in the state, or in fact, all summer. A lot of times we'd take off and he'd just let my son, his son-in-law, or my brother-in-law, or someone run his business, and we'd just take off and fish all over
like
the whole
for Northwest. Trout, steelhead, everything?
Trout, you name it.
Yeah.
Mainly trout.
Yeah.
Dad was mainly a trout fisherman. And that was quite an exciting life for...
Huh. So he was your first biggest mentor.
Oh, yes. Yeah. He built his own lines. He built his own fly lines, you know, with lenses and varnish and his own rods. He was quite a thinker and an inventor. What some of the things he come up with invented originally? The windshield washers. He's one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he had the first patent on.
So what did you do before those were out?
Huh?
Before
in the 20s, yeah.
I guess you just had to wipe it off with your hand before you had those?
Yeah. Yeah, but he invented the first windshield washers and all that.
Yeah.
And a lot of other things. He was a very, very brilliant guy.
Huh.
Yeah. On the coast, not the fish.
What?
The fish you got on the coast when you were just little.
Oh, yeah. I was about probably 4 years old or something like that. And at that time, there was a little bridge that went across Nesquin
Creek. Oh, yeah. Yep.
Right, where you used to go across this bridge and then into the resort area there. And I was fishing off that bridge, and I caught 18-inch cutthroat off that bridge. I was fishing there with my mom, and Dad was fishing up on the Trask or Nestuck or something, probably, fishing for trout. And I caught a bigger fish that day than he did. And that I'll still remember how proud I was of that day.
Was it a cutthroat?
Yeah, big old sea run cutthroat to come up the Nesquin Creek, you know.
Yeah,
and there was no wooden bridge there at that time.
Huh.
And I still remember.
What was in Nesquin? Do you remember what that looked like? Was it a town?
Not much.
Yeah, a couple of buildings or something.
Yeah, just a small little village there.
Yeah,
we spent a lot of time over there.
Huh.
On the coast.
Yeah, that was actually, we were talking to Jay Nicholas. Uh-huh. That was his first fish. Mm-hmm. Or I think his first steelhead he caught was on Nesquin, too. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. He told a similar story.
Yeah.
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 Huh. So you basically, you were all fly fishing. It was your dad was into all your life. And when did the transition from like the Carlton and the whole out to here, how did all that take place?
Well, when my dad died, in 1932, we moved over to, my mom married a gentleman, and we moved over to Canby.
Oh, okay.
And I was living in a little town, a little village, not even a village, a little area called New Era, which are just 3 miles north of Canby and about 5 miles south of Oregon City, right with where Parrot Creek comes into the Willamette. And after my dad died, we moved. Mom married this guy from the Canby, and we moved over there. Hmm. So, and I'd fish Parrot Creek all the time. In fact, that's what on our first date.
So maybe we can tell a little bit of the history about you two now. Yeah. So that's where you met. Was it Canby?
It can be. Yeah. And on our first date, I took her down and we fished for.
No, that was the second date.
Second date.
The first date.
Right.
Yeah. Came to the door and.
Yeah.
And I thought you were coming to talk to my dad, so he called me to come back out and say, "I think this young man wants to talk to you or something."
And I had to ask her dad if I could take her and go to the movies.
Yeah, nice.
And I did.
So the second date, I should have known, because I came from a family that didn't do any kind of fishing.
Oh yeah,
yeah. And we didn't catch any fish that day, but we caught crawdads. I thought it was great.
Yeah,
I had a ball.
The Parrot Creek, which comes in there by Newera.
Uh huh.
And some of the side channels of that, side tributaries, caught a lot of little crawdads. And
that was in December. That was in November 5th.
No,
and then December 7th was Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And so that was when things changed, of course. You immediately went down to see.
Yeah, I was already flying. I had my pilot's license.
Wow.
And when Pearl Harbor happened.
Huh.
And I knew I was going to be a fighter pilot because I was a superb athlete and just perfect vision.
Sure.
And so I went down the day after Pearl Harbor to enlist in the old Army Air Corps.
Yeah.
The first time I found out I was colorblind.
Wow.
And it broke my heart when the old flight surgeon came out and said, you're 90% colorblind more. I got to reject you. So I went in the Army instead.
Yeah, no kidding.
He just waited for the draft.
Oh, wow.
Which gave us time to get old enough that Mother let us get married.
Oh, I see.
So we were married.
Oh, you were?
When he went into the Army. Service.
Yeah. Went back to the Armored Force School at Fort Knox, Kentucky.
Uh-huh.
And took my basic training there. And then went down to Fort Oglethorpe for a while in Georgia, and then the old Camp Stewart, Georgia, Fort Stewart now, I guess it is.
Did you fish any of those places? You couldn't.
No.
Oh, right, in Georgia.
The only place you fished was in Europe, in England.
I fished a little bit in England when we went over there. You know.
Oh, you did. For like Atlantic salmon? Or?
No, just trout.
Just trout, yeah.
Well, actually, there was some Atlantic salmon in it. I saw some, but I was just fishing for the browns.
Uh-huh.
There was Lord.
There's Lord.
Lord one fly rod or something.
Yeah. This one fellow that owned this manor and big property owner, he actually, I don't know why he would hear, I was just a lonely little listed man. But he actually let me use one of his beautiful fly rods, and I fished on his property and for trout, browns, you know. And like I say, I looking back at that was I can't believe that he would do that. But he knew I loved it, you know.
Yeah.
I would go and just watch the creek and watch for fish, you know. And there were some browns in that little, it was just a creek about as wide as this table.
Wow.
But there were browns in there, something like that.
Huh.
Huge browns in some of the deeper pools.
So is that, that probably helped you keep a little bit of a connection to.
It while I was in England, it helped me keep my sanity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. So you were, in the Army, so now you go from thinking that you're going to be flying planes to you're on the ground, like with the D-Day sort of.
Yeah.
The D-Day.
Yeah. Went and landed on Utah Beach.
Really? So the whole storm, stormed the beaches and that whole thing?
All the way through the whole thing.
No kidding.
Yeah.
you know, people in my generation or probably even further back would never, you know, I don't know, I guess people seen movies, but there was one, Saving Private Ryan was a movie that was like, that was the first time I had ever seen in my life, because I didn't really get the history stuff, that it took me and put me in that position. Like you felt like you were that, you know what I mean? And it was, it blew me away, because it kind of gives me goosebumps now just thinking about that. Well, that was you. You were out there doing that.
That's right. They really followed the same path.
Yeah. So that's pretty much what it was.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I landed on Utah Beach and was involved with the Battle of the Bulge, the whole thing. And then we were just on the outskirts of Berlin when we got pulled back over the Elbe at Magdeburg, you know, let the Russians come in and take that area.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to watch that whole thing when the Russians come in. And like I said, it was scary as heck.
Wow.
And I immediately sent a letter to Jeannie when I went, right when the Russians came in, and I told her that we were, after what I had seen, I expected we were going to have some problems with the Russians.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
It was, I could not believe the inhumanity of that.
Right.
But we in the U.S. Army did not realize just what the Germans put the Russians through.
Oh, yeah.
When they went into Russia.
Right.
And so they were kind of getting back
at
the Germans.
Yeah.
But I talk about the old term rape, pillage, and burn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I saw it.
Wow.
I saw it.
And then you saw Dachau.
Yeah, and then I was one of the first ones to arrive in Dachau. Saw that.
What is the, is there anything taken away from that whole experience that you know, that you took that maybe in a positive way helped you in your life or anything that was? Yes.
Well, it made me, how can I use the term I want to use? It made me a man, I'll put it that way.
And you were, how old were you when you went in?
When I was in there, about 19. Mm-hmm. 19.
So 19 years old, and you were left. When were you done?
Huh?
When did you?
3 years.
Yeah, I went right through the whole thing.
Yeah.
And we were just on the outskirts of Berlin when we got pulled back. Let the Russians take over that area. And we were on a little place, just not a little place, but a town by Magdeburg, Germany, on the Elbe River. When we got pulled back to the west side of that and watched the Russians come in. And it was scary.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I think, this is, I'm super interested. I'd love to sit here. Maybe after we're done here, we could chat a little more about some of the history there. I was hoping you could maybe bring us into, I guess maybe take us to that point where you come back to the U.S. Mm-hmm. And then from there, and how does all that transition happen into the point where you guys wind up out here?
Well, when I come back from the Army, we were living in Canby. Well, we were already married. I was married already.
I was living in Canby. Yeah. You were.
Yeah, I was. But we come back and I was looking for something to do, so after I got out of the Army, and we bought a restaurant in Roseburg.
Oh.
Because I'd saved all his money that he sent home and plus whatever I earned. And we had $3,000.
That was a lot of money then.
To start with. And his brother-in-law put in money to help us so that we could buy this little restaurant in Roseburg.
That was the start of our
Roseburg.
We didn't know a thing about a restaurant.
I didn't know anything about a restaurant.
Found out.
What made you, why a restaurant? Why not?
You wanted business for
yourself. Some kind of business.
Yeah. You wanted to work for yourself. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to be on my own. And we had this little it was a pretty good sized restaurant. How many did we seat? About 80?
Maybe? I don't know. It was business people's.
What was the name of it?
Moore's Cafe. Well, actually, at one time it was Sullivan's Cafe, and then we changed it to Moore's Cafe.
Uh-huh.
And
it was in downtown. So
yeah, right in downtown Roseburg.
It was for the business people.
And, yeah. And every day I would take off and be up here on the river somewhere.
Oh, really?
After we got through the lunch
after
hour.
After we got through the lunch
so
hour.
So you didn't miss a beat. So you come back from the war and you're
on the river.
It's fishing.
On the river.
In Steelhead.
He knew that river was there.
Yeah. Yeah, you betcha.
Really?
Yeah.
And you had this fellow that taught you about where some of the pools were, and he wouldn't let you fish first.
Yeah. A fellow named friend of mine by the name of Curly Reynolds.
Yeah.
He showed me the first one to really show me the river.
Yeah. 46,
47. And he wouldn't let me fish through first. He always insisted he fished first.
And he would show
you to mess it up.
No kidding. He'd show you, he'd say, okay, here's a run. Yeah. Here's a little rock. If you slide it next to that rock.
Yeah. And he would do it first and let me come behind him.
Yeah.
And after a while, I got better than he was.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
so you just started going by yourself.
Yeah. Then I would come up and I got so adept in a hurry that I was catching tons of steelhead. I mean, every time I'd come up, I'd catch fish, and even when they weren't many being caught. And Phil that had the old North Umpqua Lodge, Clarence Gordon.
And is that what became Steamboat?
Well, no, the lodge was on the other side.
Oh, across the river.
Yeah, it was on the other side.
Gotcha.
Of the river. And but Clarence, I was fishing in front of his guest a lot. You know.
Oh yeah.
So he hired me to help.
Oh,
take care of his guests.
To guide.
So I wouldn't get in the road, I think.
Was that your first guiding?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I did and met some really, truly wonderful people that wound up helping us immeasurably when I had a chance to buy Clarence out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what we bought was the store that he made out on the river. Because
Clarence had built these. Where the Steamboat Inn is now.
Yeah.
Clarence had built a little, well, in fact, there's a picture of it.
By the front door.
Yeah, by the front door, there's a picture of it. The day we took over.
Yeah.
And, we had a very interesting experience starting that. And Jeannie had to do all the work, and I had all the fun. I'd go fishing.
Exactly right.
So the other side, so you have the current lodge now, that was the store. Then the other side was the lodge.
The old North Umpqua Lodge is on the other side.
Gotcha. But he had closed that down because of the power company building the dams.
Oh, right. Okay.
So he had closed it down because he couldn't predict what was going to happen.
I see.
But the river would get muddy and, and
okay.
He couldn't have people come from all over the world. And
right. And what year was this?
And 47. 40,
40, so 47.
47.
So this is when you started to see some effects from human logging road building.
Originally was building the dams.
Yeah.
And road building and things like that. And then they started building the dams, building roads up the creeks, you know. And
that's when it got bad, they started.
And this is the dam. There's the dam that's still there about 6 miles up at the campground. Or not a dam, but there's a fish ladder.
There's a ladder.
Just a ladder.
Yeah, ladder up just above Steelhead Creek.
Wow. So you basically, so now you're in it. So you've got this place, and you still have the place in Roseburg, the restaurant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We sold it right away.
Oh, okay.
Well, we had it.
We
had it that summer.
Well, we tried.
We tried to run it that summer, and we just found out that it was too far separated to try to do.
Gotcha.
So we,
in other words, the helper helping themselves.
Oh, really?
Didn't work very well.
No kidding. Yeah, you're too spread out.
Yeah.
So then you focus and said, okay, let's sell that and put it all here. And then did you move up here to
Well, we were already moved.
Oh, you were already?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And was this at this location?
No.
Steamboat, gotcha.
Okay. We lived right in the building.
Huh.
And there was a fellow that was working on the road that left his equipment sitting there, and he told you
he had a D8 cat.
Yeah, and so that Frank took it down and cleared out a spot for some, I didn't know where he's going to put a cabin, but that he had it figured out.
Yeah.
He cleared out a space and built four cabins that summer.
That's right. That's right. Wow. So, and then, so slowly over time, you basically, that became the Steamboat Inn, and that was
your... that by the time that summer was over, it was Steamboat
Inn. It was. Okay. And you guys were all in there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that was in 40, or what was the year of that when it first came?
That was 1957.
57, yeah. Because it was 57. You guys had that for 18 years up to 75. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what was the, in 75, what, why did you guys sell, or how that all?
We had lost a daughter in 1970. Oh. And when after that happened, it just made a difference for me just to still be there, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And we had this property. We had to put some houses on it for rentals and so forth. And we just decided to build a place.
Originally, this was the location of the old Thunder Mountain
Lodge.
Mm-hmm.
And had a road going down off of this road. This was the road at that time.
Okay.
And he had a road going down about where the gate is down there now, and had some tent frames around that corner. That's where the old original lodge was up here.
He really didn't get to run it.
He just got it started. And the first year he got started, here come the road and wiped out what he had to put in down there.
He had no choice.
So basically we have the history. I mean, there's a lot more to it, I know, than that as far as everything. But you've got the Steamboat, you guys are going, then you eventually sell it. I would like to get a little more into just on like fishing, because a lot of the people that listen to this, they always love to, I know they'd love to hear about how you have caught fish over the years on the North Umpqua.
Any time that our guests caught a fish for dinner, and Frank, I'd say that's not enough fish, Frank, for everybody. So Frank could go out to my pool and get another fish.
That's right.
Bring it in.
And your pool is just...
And not my pool. My pool was actually his pool.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't... Jeannie's pool was right below the end.
Oh, right. That's so funny, because we talked a little bit about my dad. Yeah. My mom's name is Marcia. Uh-huh. And on the Deschutes, there's a run called Marcia's Drift.
Uh-huh.
And it was the same sort of thing where she used to go out there and she fished spoons on the Deschutes. But she caught way more fish than anybody.
Yeah.
And so that was her drift. And it's still...
He was the one that went out to, up there. It was up there near the Mott Bridge. So,
oh, okay.
Up there in that area. Yeah. He never told anybody where it was. He'd just go get the fish.
I could hook a fish.
So what was it? So explain how you would get into a fish. I mean, what was any tips or secrets, or you just go out there? I mean, would you put on a special fly, or?
I had this one place there that fish would stack up and nobody else knew they were there.
Uh-huh.
And so they were never bothered. So.
And they're stacking up like in ledges or?
Yeah, right against the ledges and holding in there. And I'd go up there and make one cast usually and have a fish.
And what was the cast, like a long cast or a short?
No, but.
Really? Yeah, like 15 feet or something?
At the most, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
How many spots out there on this river now are
there's
still?
There's actually quite a few, but most people don't realize.
Yeah.
Most people, in fact, a lot of the people today will actually spook the fish.
That's right. That's right.
They will actually spook them.
Which is kind of good, maybe.
Yeah, but that's a good tip, that when you come up, don't just walk up to the... You might have a fish sitting right out in front
of
you.
And you
would get up and like sneak up?
I would. You bet.
On your hands and knees?
You bet.
On our 25th anniversary, when you were teaching me how to fly fish for steelhead, that's just what I did. I didn't see the fish until I got out and was walking along the side of the road. And you were fishing the area, and there went that fish, and it was right there.
First time she realized there'd be a fish there, see?
Yeah, that's when I realized that, there's a fish there. I don't have to think there's no fish. There is.
Yeah. Romer Gray was Lynn Gray's son.
Oh, yeah.
He was the most stealth fisherman I've ever seen in my life. He would sneak up on the pool,
crawling,
just crawl.
No kidding.
Oh yeah, he was something else all
day. So you weren't necessarily catching all of these fish in like the tail out. You were catching some of them right in off tight end.
Yeah, a lot of spots were in little pockets, you know, and things like that.
Right.
And that's one thing Romer taught me, boy.
Mm.
Romer and Lauren, both sons, stayed with us quite a bit in those days.
Oh, okay.
Among other people, Jack Hemingway.
Mm. No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
Jack was a superb fisherman, Jack Hemingway.
He's the one that first introduced the spay rod to.
Yeah.
Okay. So that was it. So that was the first spay on this river.
Yeah.
So far as we know, that was the first.
And that, and to date, have you ever casted a spay rod? No. So you never. Yeah. So what was the biggest reason why you never got into it?
They're a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
All that length, you don't need it. I can throw a single handed as far as they can throw those things. So.
Yep. Yeah.
So why use them?
This is. I can't wait to share this episode with my dad because he sees eye to eye with you on this, and he never got into the spay either.
You don't cast a spay rod; you throw it.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a difference.
Exactly. You kind of huck it or shoot it.
You're cheating. Well, that's not quite the word for it, maybe, but.
So what do you think out here? So you have your single-handed rod all these years. You've caught lots of fish. I mean, what do you think? You hear people talk about it's a real challenging river to fish. Is it just the wading? Is that the biggest thing?
Well, that's a lot of it, yes. And the way the bedrock formations.
Mm-hmm.
And there's still, you know, there's very few left now. The last few years, people have finally started really discovering some of the little pockets that most of them never knew before.
Right.
But all of a sudden, I'll go down and I'll go, oh, no, I found that one now.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But for years, a lot of them, all I had to do was go down and make one cast, and I could find a fish.
No kidding. Yeah. And are the fish, do you think they're extra spooky here? I mean, do you go with really long leaders? And
I don't know. Okay. 9 foot.
Yep. Just pretty normal.
That's all you need.
Uh-huh. And the fish, so the wading's tough. The river's pretty clear most of the time. So the fish are a little spooky, but nothing different than the other summer steelhead.
No.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, main thing is just to get a good drift.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
and we talked about that a little bit off air is the mending.
Right. Mending. And to me, these guys using weighted flies and stuff,
Can you use weighted flies?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you can use weighted flies.
And certain times of year.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's certain times when you can't.
There's certain times
you're not supposed to.
Yeah. Like from the 1st of July to
September.
But you think with summer steelhead, and I guess we're talking summers here, I guess it's just in my experience, you're fishing flies on the top or even riffle hitching and dries. Yeah. So why would you want to get down?
Because you stand a lot more better chance of hooking a fish.
You will. So that's it.
Oh, yeah.
Just getting down to it. Yeah.
Getting down to them. Like I say, I just never have gone to the weighted stuff, except in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
And then I won't use some of the stuff that they use because, it's dangerous. It's out in the back of the head.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you don't really need it, you know.
Yeah.
You can catch fish without it. You might not catch quite as many, but what the heck.
Huh.
It shouldn't be, to me anyway, a steelhead fishing on a river like this, it's a real gift to be able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And to do it, make it like if I may use that crazy term, it's like going to a whorehouse.
Huh. Yeah. Yeah. It's down and dirty.
That's right.
That's what I was going to say, the same thing on the Deschutes. Again, that's where I've done most of my summer steelhead. Mm-hmm. You see some guys out there, because you can use weight and all sorts of stuff. You'll see guys out there nymphing.
Yeah.
And it's always like, I always think nymphing.
Yeah. But it's not nymph. It's like some of them will use a pound of lead.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The things are hucking out. It's crazy. But I always wonder, I'm thinking like, you know, all this time, it's such a great river for swinging. Why not stay on the surface?
Did you ever know or hear of a guy named Bill Howland?
I've heard of it. Yeah.
He lived right there by Maupin.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, I've heard the name.
Yeah. He used to have that hill, I'd have a place up on the hillside right above that run above Maupin there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think Langtree's Riffle is what we used to call it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I used to go over there and fish with him a lot on that
spot. Oh, no kidding. Yeah.
He was a superb fisherman.
Yeah.
He was really good.
Huh. Wow. So you fished a lot of your stuff, not much down. Did you get into the surface dries too much?
I love dry fly fishing for steelhead.
Yeah. So when would you pull those out? When versus like fishing a little, just a wet fly?
Huh?
When would you go for the dries versus just a normal wet fly?
Same time. Yeah. All year.
So right. Summertime right now, August, September.
Up, usually up till the water got down into say in the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
Anything above from 45 up.
Okay. So right now you could go out there.
This is ideal right now.
Okay. And when you're doing that, do you just tie it on and use a dry line and just swing it just like you would normally?
Well, mend, you know.
And make your mend,
Mend them and.
Uh-huh. And you just want to get that wake.
Yeah, just have it come across nice and smooth.
And what's that? How does that, for somebody that's never caught one on a dry, what is that whole, what does it look like? What does it feel like when that fish takes versus a wet fly?
Well, it actually, normal wet fly drift, there's very little. Because a lot of times on the wet fly, you know, it's down below, you get an angle down like this when they hit. And they'll come up and just.
They'll hammer it anyway.
Hammer it. Turn over the top and take it down. Same thing you do on a dry fly. Except a lot of times on dry fly, if I'm fishing a regular dry, I'll be casting upstream, you know, right like this.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and then let just have it come fairly close to me.
Okay.
A lot of times, you know, just let it float down. You'll see them come up, slide up underneath it right in front of you.
No kidding. Yeah. And you're doing like will you do a downstream mend to try to
speed it? Just taking, once you cast up like that, you know, and then kind of just give a little flip mend like that until just kind of.
Wow.
And
so these fish, so like right there, a fish will take, and that's a fish that you've kind of snuck up so it doesn't see you.
Right, stayed real low so you don't spook
them. And when you're, again, back to that low, so are you casting like on your low casting?
Usually it's like casting like that, it'd be up.
Okay.
Float down.
So what do you think, if you had to say over the years, percentage of fish that you've caught 30 feet or less versus more than 30 feet?
Well, it all depends on the time of year.
Okay. Say summer. Say this time of year.
Summertime. Oh, I don't know. It's hard to say.
Right. You've caught so many fish you get rid of.
It just,
but you've caught a lot. You've caught a lot both ways, right out front and right up.
You bet.
Yeah.
Wintertime, of course, you got usually have to make a longer cast. to get to some of the spots, because you can't wade the places. You got to cast further.
Okay.
But it's not that, even in the wintertime, it's not that difficult. A lot of places you'll have fairly short casts.
Okay. When you had the steamboat for 18 years, you guided most of that time. And then did you guide after? And what do you think in all the guiding time was the hardest thing about guiding?
I don't think there was anything really tough about guiding. Personalities of people.
Yeah.
Probably the most difficult.
It was part of the whole thing. If the people stayed with you, that you would take them.
Yeah.
Well, that was just everybody knew that was the deal.
Yeah, I stayed at the end. Well, I'd take them out. You know.
Yeah. No kidding.
Charge. They weren't charged for it.
Oh, that's great. So, wow.
And we had people come from all over the world. You know.
Of course.
To fish with us.
So it was pretty. You knew most years in and out. I mean, the runs probably went up and down then as well, but you would get fish. You weren't too worried about catching fish.
Well, I fished practically every day, and I knew every flow of the river, where they'd be and how to get to them.
And what do you think was a, you know, if you go out in the morning for a morning, and are you fishing mostly just when the sun's not on the water?
Usually. I'd usually fish up till the time the sun come up.
And then you went, okay. And then
I'd go in and have breakfast.
And then, so you wouldn't fish too often when the sun's on the water?
No, I did a lot of it.
Oh, you did?
Oh, yeah.
And would you fish it any differently than you would?
No, well, I'd, you know, a lot of times I would fish upstream.
Yeah.
And, you know, they'll make a little upstream cast.
Yeah.
Because I knew exactly right where every fish, practically every fish in the river was.
Uh-huh.
That time I was, I knew where every fish was holding, and I knew just how to.
You knew every little
nuance of how to get,
hook
a fish, you know, in different places.
Wow.
That's a lot of times I'd fit, hook tons of fish close from here to there, you know.
Yeah. So what was back in the day, do you think was a good, like a good morning fishing?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. If you, if any time, if you could hook two or three, two or three fish, you were doing
feeling good. Oh yeah,
yep. Then of course there were some days where you couldn't miss.
Some days you couldn't catch.
That's true.
And some days you couldn't catch.
Yeah. What were those days when you had when you couldn't catch? If you had a client or somebody, was it
Jack Dishes?
Oh yeah, Jack would go what nuts, but most people. Appreciated.
Yeah, just being here on this river. This is a beautiful river.
That's most people appreciate old growth
trees.
Well, what bothered Jack was the fact that other people were catching fish and he wasn't.
Oh, that's always tough. That's
he's a superb fisherman, most methodical fisherman I've ever. He was a chemistry professor at Oregon State.
Oh, okay.
And he was one of the
brilliant man.
He was a brilliant man. He could have. Every university in the world wanted him to be there.
No kidding.
And he stayed at Oregon State because of the Northumberland
River. Wow. There you go.
And he would sneak out there, and it was interesting to watch him. He was the most.
Huh.
He wasn't the best caster in the world.
Yeah.
But boy, he sure knew this river.
And that was it. He knew it so well. He knew the same thing. He'd get within 10 feet of a fish.
Oh, you bet. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a superb fisherman.
Huh.
D-E-C-I-U-S, Jack Dishes.
Okay.
And he was, like I say, he was one of the leading professors in the chemistry side in the whole world.
Uh-huh.
He stayed at Oregon State just for that.
No kidding.
First time I met him was in 1949. And he had this big...
At the old lodge.
Yeah, at the old lodge, old Northern Quail Lodge. He had this big hat on. And it was the most hair I've ever seen any man below that hat.
Yeah.
And I went home that night and I said, Jeannie, I just saw the man, a man, met a man with the heaviest head of hair I have ever seen. The next time I saw Jack, he took his hat off and he didn't have a bit hair up.
No kidding. Oh, wow. That's so he had hair. It was just,
yeah,
it was just
all down below the ears.
That's funny. You know? Oh, man.
I mean, it was on the bottom end of the head. It wasn't any up on top.
Gotcha. So he had like an afro at the lower end of his.
Yeah. We still have a tie to him because his son rents one of our houses.
Yeah. Oh, really? Oh, cool.
He's our mailman.
Oh, no kidding. There you go.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Huh. So you mentioned a couple of, I guess, mentors over the year. Is there anybody that were people that were mentors for you we haven't talked about?
I mentioned Curly Reynolds.
Curly.
Colonel Hayden.
Colonel
Hayden is the reason we moved to this.
Well, Colonel Hayden's the one that loaned us the money to start the inn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
And he was a retired military man who taught military science at Cal Berkeley.
Oh,
and
wow.
He would come up every summer and
stay up for a few weeks
and fish. Yeah.
Oh gosh, he'd come. And back he was there more than anybody.
And he'd come up, stayed up when we started the inn. Well, he was there all the time.
And he at the end of the season, he would write us a note about how we could improve.
No kidding.
Yes. Typical army.
Yeah. All right. Exactly.
However, his family, all of his family, got the same kind of. Treatment.
Yeah,
we felt free.
That's right.
It's okay.
Wow. So, so people from all over the world.
Yeah.
Did you see people up here coming in?
Yes, oh, yeah.
Yeah, we did.
And what do you think? I mean, I just know being here. I mean, it's amazing. It's spectacular. Mm-hmm. I mean, what do you think? Is there something that makes it so special? Anything that we?
Well, it's a, you know, the nearest river to this, in my judgment, is the Lockshaw in Idaho.
Oh yeah. I've been on the Lockshaw.
Yeah, the Lockshaw is a nerve. Yeah.
It's kind of a, like we're in a canyon.
Right.
Yeah.
We're in a pretty steep canyon.
And the fish the same way, you know. And
yeah.
Lockshaw had some marvelous steelhead on it.
Oh, yeah.
It did. We don't know what it's like now.
Right. I don't know.
I used to be over there every year.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, I used to love to go over there.
Every summer.
Oh, wow.
fish it a little bit.
Yeah.
But I had terrible to leave this river, but it was interesting to go and fish.
Sure.
Fish that too.
Uh-huh.
And I'd fish it the same way, and I was able to catch fish from a lot that other people wouldn't.
You know? Yeah. That is tough to leave your home river. I have that same challenge. Yeah. It's just like being here now.
Yeah.
I feel like, oh man, you just want to keep fishing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like somebody's, you know, I just have that same thing. I know what you mean. So do you, I was out there this morning and I had a couple. I had one that I would say, you know, like you talk about, we always talk grabs, tips, taps, mm-hmm. stuff like this from fish. And you know, when you get a summer steelhead that gets, today I had the kind of a grab.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it was like a solid.
Right.
It felt like a steelhead. But I also caught a bunch of fish that were, you know, some smolts and some smaller mm-hmm. fish that were tipping it and some were on.
Mm-hmm.
Do you, have you always seen that with fish that you're going to, or can you tell when you get that touch?
Oh yeah, usually.
Well, yeah.
And most of the time your steelhead are going to be in a different spot than what.
Oh, there you go.
Your trout are.
There you go. So if you're catching trout, maybe you should be in a good spot.
You might
spot.
Not be quite in the right spot.
There you go. That's a good, a good tip for sure.
Yep. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
At least that's what I've found.
Yeah, over the years. Yeah, because the steelhead might be more down in a slot or in a deeper.
Yeah, a little bit heavier.
Yep, heavier, right? Flow. A little more protected.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
Yep.
Perfect. What do you think when you look back, and I'm not even sure when you were, if you, you know, you're 25, I ask this question occasionally, you know, you're when you were 25, is there any words of advice you would give yourself looking back at that person? I'm not sure, 25, were you guys married?
Yeah.
Oh, we were married. I was 17.
Oh, you were married. Oh, right.
From the war.
Yeah, you were married it before. So 25. So you were back from the war.
Yeah, yeah, he came back from the war.
So you were back, and you'd already purchased the restaurant.
The restaurant in Roseburg.
And,
yeah.
And he had that little son that he was just so delighted with. Yeah, you know, he had a breakdown. He had a breakdown that summer that our boy was a little over a year old. And we ended up letting his brother-in-law run the business, and we went down to his friend's, his cousin's farm, and we were there the whole summer, and we would go up in the mountains up on the Rogue, mm-hmm. Upper Rogue, and,
oh, yeah.
And little Frankie, who was just this little thing, he'd pick up a stick and try to do what his daddy was doing, you know.
He'd emulate me, you know, casting that stick.
Yeah.
So we get the first time that we leave there, he finds a metal fly rod in a store there in Medford,
Frankie had his first fly rod.
No kidding.
Yes.
And how old was he?
He was about 15 months right there.
Holy cow!
Yeah, Frank had a breakdown there. He had a heat stroke.
Oh.
And he had Frankie out with him to round up the cattle when it hit him, and he actually crawled back to the house.
Jeez.
And little Frankie walking beside him.
Yeah. No kidding.
To get back.
Oh, wow.
He was out in Shenandoah Valley, out in Medford.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah, Frankie was our fishing boy, I'll tell you. He really was.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I was just thinking as far as... We talked a little bit at the start about kind of the war and some of this stuff, you know, that whole part of your life. Mending the Line, the movie, which I think is coming out, or it's a documentary on your... Maybe you can talk a little bit about...
It's been out.
Oh, it's been out. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Kind of so out. Maybe you can talk about how, what that's about or what is the story there?
What would you say? It's basically about our life.
It's about your going back to
Normandy,
to
Europe.
Actually, to Normandy, to the stream that you saw in World War II,
mm-hmm.
and had seen this fish hanging on this building, and the thought just went through his head. Oh boy!
We were
fish there.
Chasing the Germans, you know.
Yeah,
and we're going. They were pulling back up out onto the Brittany Peninsula. Mm-hmm. And we were going across this bridge and on over the Orne River, I think it was. And anyway, I looked down and I saw this beautiful Atlantic salmon hanging out on the wall outside this building down there. And I thought, oh, God, if I could just stop and go down and fish like that, and I would love to be able to fish for one of those.
Yeah.
And that's why I went back over after, you know, after a while when I went that back to Normandy, that's why I went back to there and was able to.
These young kids that had come up and done a fly fishing thing of Frank on the river here asked him at the end of that time, said, Frank, what would you like to do if you had a chance to do something different with your life at this point? And Frank said, he said, I would really like to go back to Normandy and try to fish that stream.
Catch some salmon out of that stream.
So that's it.
And that was how the story started. They put it all together.
Wow.
And did the film.
They filmed everything. And we went over there for how long?
It was a very popular thing for a while there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I hooked quite a few fish.
Oh, you did? Yeah. Fishing the same sort of technique?
Well, he didn't get to hook too many because they were more interested in where.
That was frustrating.
What it looked like for the camera, than whether there's a fish there or not,
right?
You know?
Yeah,
that was frustrating.
Yeah,
but I went along with him.
Yeah, that's good. So I was noticing out on the road. I mean, this is a highway.
Yes,
this is
down
not
below.
Yeah, down below.
Yeah,
we have a highway. I'm not even sure the highway number or whatever, but
it's 138.
Okay, it's 138
east.
138 east. So I noticed as I was fishing, there's a lot of logging trucks coming out,
but not like they used to be.
Not like they used to be.
Yeah. They used to be 10 times more.
Really? 10 times more.
And there hasn't been for a while, this summer, they were really stopped because everything was so dry. And
they had to stop. That's right.
Yeah. So now that they've got a chance.
They're going. What it is. Yeah. They're up. Yeah. They're doing more and more. Okay.
Yeah.
I wanted to touch just briefly because I think it is a big part of kind of some of the stuff you've done. And we were maybe we could talk just briefly about the Pass Creek, that another movie, right? Mm-hmm. Another documentary.
Mm-hmm.
Another film that was back in the 60s, right? Early 60s.
Can't remember, late 60s.
Somewhere in there.
66, 67.
Well, that was when it got. Yeah, but what you started early 60s, starting the record of the. Because he, right off the logging, was changing it, the
streams,
level. Yep. The level, you know, the water coming into some of the streams.
Muddy.
Susan Creek, they were.
Yep.
I mean, Seaboat Creek.
Right.
Just hot. It was hot. Huh. And
temperatures went from
of every darn day
57 up to 85.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
He'd go and take temperatures all these little places where they were logging and everything. And because this PLM was the one that really got it.
It was more than
that. Yeah.
That was because they had this spot they really
screwed
up. Tore it up.
Yeah.
And it really the other thing he did was when they finished the film, this man, you know, he could fly. We had a small plane in Roseburg, and he would take that plane and he would fly wherever all over, mostly over Oregon though.
Honey, Oregon and Montana, Idaho.
No kidding.
So forth.
All over.
And he would be in the audience when they brought out the film and he would just make them look like fools.
Yeah.
So basically
the film was showing the habitat destruction.
Right. And the BLM would try to contribute that.
Yeah, thing. And then you would be there.
I'd be in the audience.
Yep.
Right.
And then I would just shoot them down.
You'd jump out and tell the other side of the story.
I flew all over the whole country.
No kidding.
I had a Piper Comanche, you know, good, beautiful airplane.
He ended up actually Washington, D.C. Talk to us.
Congressional hearing.
Yep.
Yeah.
So you were a conservationist when conservationist wasn't even a word, right?
Yeah.
Well, these fellas took that on to do that film. It was really interesting because they were set to go do some film up in Canada or something, and it followed through. And Frank said, "Well, look, guys, this needs attention."
Yeah.
And
oh, really?
And
so nobody knew about this.
Yeah, so they just
I was trying to show people what was happening, but
it takes something like that.
Yeah,
but these guys were professional movie people from Los Angeles.
Yep.
And they came up and I
San Francisco, said, hey, actually.
I want to take you and I want you to make a film.
Right.
And that's where that Mending the Line came from.
Okay.
And it was that film that did it because it
really changed
it, it just showed so the bleakness of what they were doing.
Yeah. You know? Did you see when that was going on, direct like Steelhead runs and effects of?
Oh yes.
Yeah.
No question.
You saw, you couldn't, it was so muddy you couldn't fish because.
Well, yeah, even when it wasn't muddy though, they would wipe out the gravel bars and all.
Oh yeah. Oh, right, because all the, yeah.
Well,
oh,
yeah, but what they were doing was just changing the whole makeup of the stream.
Of the stream, yeah.
They
run right through the middle of the stream with the cat, you know.
Wow.
Them out.
Well, and that was, I think, that's been done over the.
Oh, yeah.
They figured stupidity. The fish would survive anything.
They could do it and do it right.
Wow.
And not hurt anything.
Yeah.
And that's why I tried to point out.
I see.
And we finally got that across.
Yeah. And now I think I'm not sure what the name of the bill is, but there's a bill in Congress, the Moore Foundation. I'm not sure the exact name.
Sanctuary.
Moore Sanctuary. But it's on hold until something changes.
Sure, but there is this thing out there. Oh right, yeah, because of the politics. But there is this bill, and I know there's people that are still pushing to get this done, which would set aside a large chunk of land.
That whole drainage.
The whole drainage.
Steamboat Creek drainage.
The whole stream, but yep. Mm-hmm. Would basically protect that forever.
Perpetuity.
Wow.
Yeah, because there is that.
You'd still be able to log it.
Yeah.
But you'd have to do it with extreme care.
So.
And take other resources other than the timber and consideration.
Yep. Yeah. Was that, how did it, was it, did it feel like?
Well, he was off running to do this and running to do that, you know. Somebody had to stay and run the place.
That's right. Oh, wow. So you're out here doing all this conservation stuff, and you're running the whole. And so while you're doing this, so are you also out there guiding the fishermen,
too? No guiding.
All right. No. So basically, during that time, the people that were coming up here didn't have a guide.
Well, they started the Steamboaters group and that, because.
But our son was just a superb fisherman.
Oh, right. Oh, okay.
Yeah, he was.
Frankie was, how old was he that time they took Lauren out? 12 or something? Something like that.
10 or 12.
And you sent him out with
Lauren because Zane Gray's son.
Oh, yeah.
He went out with Lauren Gray and Frankie outfished Lauren.
Well, Lauren went through the water and he didn't catch anything, and Frankie came in behind him and caught something.
Caught fish.
No kidding.
Lauren was so.
He was really ticked off.
Yeah.
That, you know, he said that this kid had no manners
at
all. And Frank said, what'd you say? Well, Lauren,
he is just a kid, but he's a damn good fisherman.
Yeah. Wow.
Because Lauren thought he was one of the best.
Well, Lauren was a good fisherman.
He was a good fisherman.
Yeah.
Frank outfished him.
Wow. That is, wow. So there's in your life, this conservation piece, the river, when you look back, look out 50, 100 years from now, and you look back, is there something you would want to, you'd want you guys to be remembered for? Anything special?
Yeah, really the thing it'd be wonderful to think that
the river was still here.
Mm-hmm.
Still there and be producing fish.
You can still catch steelhead.
Yeah. And other things too, even the little cutthroat and everything else in the stream is very, very, very important.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the forest too.
And the forest too, yeah. But you can log and do it correctly, you won't screw things up. That's basically.
Yeah.
I mentioned that already.
Yep. No, there's ways to do it for sure.
Do it right.
Yeah.
And all the resources can be utilized.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you have? I always ask all my guests as far as flies. I'm not sure if you're into some names. Do you have a name of a fly you could send out to everybody, or a fly you love to catch a fish on? Or maybe you've caught a lot of fish on.
Well,
that's the one that got put on the
Muddler.
Ugly muddler.
Oh, the ugly muddler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but basically the old skunk fly was.
Oh, the green butt skunk.
Skunk.
No, not the green butt, the skunk.
That green butt is just a bunch of hogwash.
Yeah. So you don't like the green mutt?
Well, it's all right, but
it's all right.
It just when it was Dan's, it was Dan Callahan's creation.
Oh, it was the green mutt is Dan Callahan's. Mm-hmm. Okay, and he was, and what was Dan Callahan again?
He was an attorney from Salem.
Okay,
and he was on the Fish and Wildlife Commission with me.
Oh, I see.
Dan was a superb fisherman.
And photographer. Huh? And photographer.
And photographer.
No kidding.
We've got a lot of pictures.
Oh, they are. Oh, wow. Yeah. And some of the pictures I noticed in the steamboat, there were some. Dan's. I saw his name, some Dan's. Yeah. Dan's. Okay. Dan's. Wow.
Yeah.
So the skunk. So you like a black, well, a white wing, right?
The white wing.
It's got a white wing.
That's the old skunk.
That's the old skunk. Yeah. A little red tail.
Yeah, red tail and black body and silver. Silver.
Okay, so that's your go-to wet fly.
That's one I always use.
Yep, I like black too.
And it's just as good as any of them.
So do you think a purple fly, black fly, Roy? Doesn't matter. Get in front of the.
Yeah, get it. Main thing is get them in front of the present it right. You know,
if somebody was coming out here for their first time and you just had to tell them a little tip about maybe finding a fish to get their first fish in this river. What would you tell them?
Find a rapids, a fast water. Go above that fast water and find if you can find a rock or a ledge. And a lot of times the fish will hold against that ledge where there'll be a little bit of break in the current, or in front of a rock or ledge rock or whatever.
Maybe. And in front being like maybe upstream of a rock.
Upstream of a rock or a ledge or something like that.
Because they're on that.
There's a break in the current right there.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll hold right in that soft spot.
Yep.
And usually they don't like that heavy current. And they'll find that soft spot every time.
When you're using when you're out there swinging and you got your 9-foot leader and then your fly line, how do you know to judge where your fly is to make sure it's going?
You see it.
Oh, you can see your.
Usually, you see, and you can also follow the line. If you got 115, 120 feet out, follow the end of that line. You know, it's right there somewhere.
Yeah. So you don't have to be exact, but just get in the general.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Wow. Is there a fish out of all the years, any memorable story, anything that comes to mind, or one fish, maybe a big fish, one that.
About that one right up at the Bogus Creek that you went.
Oh yeah,
that was there all summer. Kept trying to catch it.
This one fish that I don't know. It had to be.
It was a big fish.
It was a big fish. I would say it was probably 15 to 18 pounds. Good summer
fish.
And it held there for weeks. And I would try for it.
We were coming down from this old road.
It wasn't the road, wasn't where it is now. It was way up high in the mountain.
Huh.
And I would go down.
So not too many people were fishing.
No. This area through here was never fished.
Oh, no kidding.
Never. I'd fish it, but nobody else was crazy enough to drop over. Run down the bank like I did. But yeah, that I can still.
So you had this fish that was in there all summer.
All summer. And he would come after the fly a lot of times, then fall back into it. And it was right at Bogus Creek. And why he stayed there that long, I never could understand it.
Hmm.
But he was there for a good month, 6 weeks.
No kidding.
Stayed that exact same spot. And it was a big fish. And finally, I can still see it. Made that cast across there, and the fly come across in front of me, and here he came. Nailed it.
He took it.
And I hit him so hard, I popped him off.
Oh, no way.
Uh-huh. It just...
Oh, boom! Roy. You mean you had it? Did you feel him?
Oh, just for a second.
Wow.
I really hit him.
What did that feel like?
I felt like an ass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
I can still
feel it. They got away.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can still feel it and still see that happening.
There you go. Gosh, that's one of those things I've had that happen too before where you don't ever forget about it sometimes.
Yeah. No, you won't. I can still visualize it. I can see myself fishing for that fish time after time, you know, watching it. He'll come out and then he'll go back and come out and go back. Oh, several weeks. like that. And he held in that same spot.
Yeah.
And finally I hooked him, and that was the last time I saw him.
Wow. That was it?
That was it.
He felt moved on upstream.
Yeah, that moved him. That got him going.
He didn't like that spot anymore. Yeah.
I think we've done a pretty good job here, as far as kind of some of the questions I had. Do you have anything else that maybe you want to we didn't touch on here? Yeah.
A little bit of everything.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm just like say it's a blessing that she put up with me.
Yeah. So how many years has it been that you guys?
75.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Going on some,
that is absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
And what is, for people out there, what is there a secret, any tip you want to give people?
You have to put up with her.
Is that how it is?
No, you have to be, I'm blessed.
You just,
I'm blessed. I'll put it down.
You love each other and you just want to make things work.
Yeah. Know? It hasn't always been easy, but.
Oh no, it wasn't always easy. Like, yeah. You know, when he had that effect from the war, that was a hard one.
Right. Through. Yep.
At the time when we lost our daughter, actually probably brought us closer together than it did anything.
Right.
Really.
Yeah. You know, you guys are an inspiration for me, and not only, fishing and where you guys live, you guys, 75 years is pretty amazing.
Hasn't been difficult at all.
Yeah.
No, really, basically, it hasn't.
It's been a beautiful life.
Huh.
It was when we moved up here on the hill, I think we had a little.
I didn't, but you did.
Well, okay. We had a little bit of having to
adjust.
Yeah. Adjustment.
Just being away from everything.
From the inn, yeah.
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 And I was still busy, really trying to. Do things, build all the houses.
Right.
And one of the neighbors, that's because we, I guess I spoke crossly to you somewhere. One of the neighbors said to me, she said, we should speak nicely to our spouse. And I thought, gee whiz, what do I sound like?
Well, yeah. She'd been an angel.
Yeah, huh. So I don't know.
She's been an angel.
Or, yeah, that's good
but
stuff.
We still are.
So. Yeah. And you were, I was just thinking, 94?
95. He's
95. 95. Just
96. Wow. Yeah. And what, so is there any secrets there of how you
keep going?
Yeah.
Well, the best thing I can say is
take a nap every day.
Oh, yeah. That's right. I was going to ask you about that because when I called the other day,
yeah. You
mentioned that he was out in the car taking a nap. Yeah. And I love that because, maybe that's the secret.
Well, we got back
from
town.
Have a good sexual life.
Oh, there you go. All right. All right.
We got back from town and he was tired.
Yeah.
And he
just
sat there and took a nap.
That's perfect. Oh, I love taking naps. That's,
yeah,
that's
have a wife that chases you all over the place. Eh?
Okay,
yeah.
That's what she is.
Yeah. All right, good stuff. So, the next 6 to 12 months, anything new going on? You guys are going to be just hanging out here?
What are we going to do?
Kids will come for Alaska for a month.
Oh, they're in Alaska.
Yeah,
Frankie,
our
Frankie
son.
The fishing kid.
No kidding.
But actually, he doesn't fish so much anymore.
Yeah, he ran the. He ran the emergency rooms in the big hospital there in Anchorage for
years. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
He's an MD.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
He graduated from Oregon State.
Huh.
And then Oregon
OHSU?
Health Science Center.
Yeah.
OHSU,
yeah.
Yeah.
He was a graduate of there.
So wow. He and his wife and their one adopted daughter come down and spend about a month with us.
Oh, cool.
He is one of the.
Gotcha.
Mid-November.
Okay, so that's coming up here. Yeah.
He has been he is a superb fisherman.
Is he? So he comes down when he gets here in October. He's going to be fishing.
Well, maybe.
Maybe. And not as much as he used to.
Yeah.
He won't fish much. Yeah. He has MS. Well, that makes a little difference.
Oh, really? Yeah.
But he's really doing
pretty darn well. You wouldn't know it.
I just heard somebody talking about the MS. I'm not sure what, where he's at and stuff, but I heard about these hyperbolic chambers. Have you ever heard of that? You guys probably haven't. There's some new stuff. Maybe he's heard of it.
He'll be on it.
Yeah, he'll be on it. But there's there's these actual. I heard this one person who's had MS for whatever it was 20 years,
and he's
managed to basically keep it controlled using this.
Well, he was 50 when he diagnosed with it.
Well, he'd had it longer
and
than that.
He's 70 right now.
And he's 70. Okay.
He'd had it before that. We just didn't realize what was going on.
Wow. Yeah, he's 70. So he's, that's amazing. He's, well, let's see, my dad is almost 80. Uh-huh. So my dad's kind of in between, uh-huh. In between there. But yeah, it's, you know, that's one of the things I always, you know, with him, I remember about 15 years ago when he kind of slowed down and I became the one that was fishing more. But he's still out there. He still likes to, you know, he doesn't get out as much. But
Frankie, I mean, when he fishes,
he's good.
Yeah,
He's a superb caster.
Yeah,
he
really
is.
When he was younger, there wasn't anybody any better.
Well,
and Dennis, our other son, he
never wanted to compete.
He didn't want to compete.
Yeah,
actually guide a few people.
Yeah.
So Dennis is your younger.
He was younger.
Yeah, he lives in Glide.
Oh, Glide. Okay.
Our daughter, our other daughter, lives in Glide.
Oh, okay. So right down the road.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's nice.
A good deal.
Yep. We're very blessed to have him that close.
Yeah.
Frankie, I say he still lives in Alaska.
Uh-huh.
And
then you have some grandkids?
Well, yeah. We've got grandkids, and now we've got great grandkids.
You got great grandkids. All right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We've got five great grandkids at this point.
You can track them. I don't.
They're all from Frankie's side of the family because it's Brianna and it's Christian that have had kids.
So who's teaching them to fish?
Nobody.
Frankie will be here.
Yeah.
What is this? Now Frankie will be here in about a month.
I think that Brian likes to fish. Reezy's husband, but I don't think he doesn't do much
of it.
Huh? He just doesn't do much.
So out of all your...
They live in Colorado,
okay,
which has some good places to go.
Good fishing, yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting, I think. So three boys or two boys?
We have two boys.
Two boys, okay, yeah.
We had two boys and two girls.
Gotcha. And we have two girls.
Okay. Lost one.
I see, yeah. Yeah, I was just, again, making the comparison. I have three older brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was doing that interview with my dad, we were talking about my brother has a son who doesn't really fish much.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really think about it, but it surprised me because I just assumed that everybody fished.
Well, Dennis did.
Well, yeah. Dennis doesn't now.
No, he
doesn't.
Yeah.
But he
never liked
to
compete with Frankie.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yep.
Well, he just wasn't going to compete with him.
He wasn't going to compete. Frankie was one
good.
That everybody loved, you know.
Right.
Everybody wanted to take fishing and go out fishing with him. And Dennis just didn't want to compete with that.
Yeah.
Well, and Frankie, Dennis kind of, you know, he was the other kid, really.
Yeah.
Frankie was he was your baby when you got back from the war. And he loved anything you did. My gosh, he'd follow you around anywhere. And Dennis just didn't want to compete with that.
No. That was too bad, in a way.
Well, in a way, but Dennis
he had his own life.
Dennis is doing a good job.
He's a good son.
Right now, Dennis is 65, mm-hmm. just turned 66, and I still haven't gotten his birthday card.
That's right, September the 3rd.
He's still driving ambulance for
Bay City ambulance.
Uh-huh.
EMT.
Oh, wow.
And he's an EMT for Glide.
So you got a couple of kids that are into the medical. Why do you think that?
I don't know, but Dennis is really, really, really good at that.
Uh-huh.
EMT, all that business. He's really
right.
good at.
That's got to be a tough job, too.
It is. He's called it all kinds of day and night.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, well, like I say, Frankie was a graduated Oregon Health Science Center, you know.
Yeah, which is one of the leaders.
Dennis graduated from Oregon State in whatever it was.
Geology.
Geology. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he was up and finding things for
He was all over Alaska.
He was up in Alaska.
Placid Oil Company.
Oh, I see.
But he was basically in hard rock. He was in charge of the hard rock mineral exploration for Placid Oil Company in Alaska. Oh,
gotcha.
But they found out that the hard rock mineral thing wasn't going to amount to much up there. So he ended up getting into the building. He just got a job there as a
construction
in Alaska. That then he got married to Jan, and they got married in this house.
Yeah. Oh, no kidding!
Frankie got married in this house.
Yeah. This is a cool house. Did you build this house?
Yeah.
Oh, so you built this?
Yeah.
That's why it's so cool. Yeah.
Yep.
Man, yeah, it's log. It's a log cabin.
Every notch.
No kidding. How long did it take you to build this?
Still working on it.
Well, we never did finished all the trim or anything, but we just didn't care. So
sure.
So that's the way that went.
It's a rough house, so what the heck?
Yeah. Well, it's been standing for how many years now?
Well, we finished it in. We moved.
75.
We didn't move in until Denny and Jack got married into this part of the house.
No.
There's an apartment up over there.
Right through that door.
Gotcha. And we lived in that until we got this part. Because we got a job with the National Park Service up in Alaska, in the Bush, Alaska. And so we were going there in the summers instead of finishing up building here.
Uh-huh.
So everything kind of slowed down. And what got us going again was when Denny and Jan were going to get married.
So you actually built it up and finished it, and
yeah.
Still not finished.
We had it all pretty much ready to move into, except for the kitchen, and we had to get the kitchen done. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what a perfect spot. Yeah.
We had that one for Dennis Black.
How many weddings we had?
Three
weddings. And has that pond? How long has the pond been out there?
Well, we finished that. You finished that when 75. You were
75.
When you were coming back from Alaska, that was 80.
1980.
So if I grab my trout flies, I might have a chance to catch one back there.
They're babies.
They're our babies. Probably wind up in the pond.
So nobody fishes for them unless it's us.
Little kids.
Oh yeah. Oh cool. That's awesome.
There's some. Probably going 8 pounds.
And we have people out there
Perfect. Well, I guess you got the river only stones, almost a stone's throw down.
Well, I own both sides of the river.
Yeah, right here. Yeah. There's a little piece of land on the other side of the river that's part of this.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So I own the river here.
Ah.
Well, I don't think that it'll hold up in court, right?
Well, I could keep them from going along the side.
Well, there you go. You have to put a sign up.
Yeah.
Well, I'm gonna
no fishing, no trespassing.
There you go. Well, if you have a sign, I can put it up when I'm down there tonight. Yeah. But hopefully, I might not catch a fish tonight, but I'm definitely gonna have a good time. I'm gonna find some new water.
So you're gonna stay.
Yeah, I think I'm going to camp. I think that little camp up above is perfect. There's
Bogus Creek?
No, I was up above.
Island camp?
Yeah. Yeah, the island.
Island camp.
That's a neat little camp. Yeah. Except you do have some noise there.
That's the one, right? It's right there. But I see it pretty
soundly. Williams Creek, you don't get that noise.
Oh, at Williams.
Williams Creek is not allowed even people to stay in there anymore.
Yes, oh, they changed that?
No, it's still.
I didn't see that one.
I bet you can.
Huh?
You can camp.
Well,
in there.
Don't tell anybody, but because they've got a sign in there.
Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. I didn't see it. I saw.
Well,
that
it was after the 09 fire that they did that. So it's been a while.
I bet you can camp in there.
Well, they've never gone in there and cleaned it out.
I bet you can camp there.
Susan Creek, that's like the...
Susan Creek is so busy.
Yeah, it's crazy. And that's your RV thing. Yeah.
You know, the reason for that is that there's
showers. Yeah, that's the thing.
And the wives want the showers.
Exactly. Yeah, that's too much for me. I'm more of a...
Yeah.
The camp. I like the unimproved camp.
The guy
stuff that
runs the one right up here, Bogus Creek, he's a peach.
On the other side of the Mott Bridge here.
Yeah.
Not Mott Bridge, but the Red Creek Bridge. Go up there and there's a couple of neat little...
Oh, you go across the bridge and go back up there. There's a campsite.
Campsites in there.
Oh, really? Oh, no kidding.
There's nobody in there. It would be nice.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I'm pretty easy. I'll probably fish till dark and then sleep and get up in the morning hopefully I'm going to try to get up before the light so I can maybe get a good spot.
Yeah.
It's going to be busy tomorrow. I don't know.
You're going to sign our guest book.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, just thank you guys for having me over.
Well, guys,
I appreciate it.
After you sign the book, you're officially part of us.
Okay. All right. Yeah, so this is just kind of everybody who stops by gets to sign, huh?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, we had a bunch of retired military guys up here last Sunday.
Uh-huh.
Had quite a party out of that one.
No kidding.
They were all PTSD.
Oh, wow.
Recovering
guys. So. Have you guys heard of there's that fly fishing group, there's a group that that's who they work with. I'm drawing a blank.
Serenity.
That's just local. Yeah. We have a friend that when he came home from Germany, what was that, 3 years ago now? Anyway, that's what he's been doing ever since, and his wife is helping him to put together a deal working with PTSD guys,
mm-hmm.
fly fishing with PTSD guys.
Yeah.
And he works really hard at it.
Yeah. I'm drawing a blank on the name of the, it's a big, but I'm going to be interviewing them next month. But basically what they do is they take people that have been to war mm-hmm. with all the PTSD, and some of them have never fly fished in their life, but they teach them how to fly fish uh-huh. and give them everything they need and uh-huh. teach them how to tie flies. Uh-huh. And a lot of them say it changes
Rusty
their life.
Doing that
yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Rusty Leninger.
What's that?
Rusty Leninger?
No, I haven't heard
of it. There's some other people doing it.
Mine's
Ben?
No, this is a national organization. It's a very, okay. If I said it, you would know. I'm just drawing a blank on the name. I'll put a link in the notes for this. But yeah, they just do great stuff. They basically take people out.
Well, Rusty's working with the VA locally here.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Uh-huh. Okay. Gotcha.
So he has fly tying and tying shops. Periods with the VA.
Yeah.
Too, guys that are interested.
And he brings them up here and let me work with them.
Uh huh. Oh, no kidding. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, they'll bring up every so often they'll get some that are kind of staying in at the VA.
Gotcha. I'll bet you it's the same group. Yeah. I'll bet it's connected to that group because
they bring them up in a bus.
Yeah, so that's exactly. Okay. Wow. Yeah. So you're still doing all sorts of stuff. I mean, again, it gets back to that thing. You guys have some amazing energy here. You're
not really.
Well, not really. Anymore.
No, we do. We do okay.
Yeah. He's still driving.
I'm no kidding.
He still gets through the town.
I can still outcast most people.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Most people work too hard at it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Guys.
Most people.
Yeah.
Because every once in a while you get a woman up there and she picks it up right off the bat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. It's true. Yeah. Casting shouldn't be that much work.
It is.
It should just be, if you do it right.
Let the rod do it.
Let the rod do the work. Yeah.
Timing and the rod act.
So there you go. If you want to find all the show notes, all the links, and everything else we covered, this is going to direct back to our older episode as well, wetflyswing.com/300. We're passing it. We actually, this is quite a milestone because 300 obviously is a lot of episodes, a lot of work, and I really wanted to find something special for you. Hope it felt good. I hope that was worth the listen. I haven't listened to that one since we recorded it back in 2018, and still hit me hard a number of things along the way there. I think you could probably get that feel. It was just a really cool episode. I want to thank you today for listening all the way in till the end here. Drop me an email if you want to do something for the Moore family, and I'll do my best to put something special together to contribute and celebrate this amazing life of Frank Moore. Don't be a stranger. Say hi in social or drop me an email. Real easy to do. dave@wetflyswing.com. Let me know you're listening. It helps to keep me going strong. Let me know if you have an episode you want to hear about, social media, Wet Fly Swing, anywhere out there, and just say, send a DM, say thanks, and let me know what you want to hear, what you want me to dig into. Okay, I'm going to let you get out of here. That was definitely a good one for me to connect back with, and just amazing life. I mean, geez, flying planes around the world, flying planes around the country, following the conservation stuff to make sure his own plane. I mean, talk about that, right? That's pretty cool. I think every step along the way, and we didn't even hit on it at all. So I'll put some links out in the show notes, wetflyswing.com/300. To some of the things we talked about. There's a couple of the movies there, and which are really amazing, and I'll get those going, and we'll just leave it there. Thanks again, and I look forward to catching you on the water or online.
Thanks for listening to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show. For notes and links from this episode, visit wetflyswing.com.